On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Hello, 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 am I alone? Is anybody there? Hello?
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hello? Hello?
Whatever.
Hello? 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 Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Hello? Is this thing on? Is this thing on? Hello? Is this what he's going to do? Is this what he's going to do for an hour? Just sit there and go, hello? Hello?
Oh yeah, make it scream like it's Thursday.
Hello, welcome to the program. My name is Ron Van Dam, and happy day to you. Happy days. It's a good name for a show. Wait a minute, that's a good name for a television series. Happy days. I think I'll work on that. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the program. My name is indeed... Crap. Oh, Ron Van Dam. You get a little bit older, you start to forget things like your name. It happens, you know. Hello? Isn't it interesting, the scenario? Let's say you're in your house, you're alone, you're in your bedroom, and you hear a noise downstairs, and it's like 2 o'clock in the morning, and you don't have any pets. And you say, oh my God, someone's downstairs, it's a burglar. And again, no one uses the word burglar. It's a thief, it's a murderer. It's an invader. I don't know what word you use. Someone's broken into my home, and you're in your bedroom, and you get yourself a bat. You get yourself a bat because, my God, if someone comes into your home, you can just hit them like a home run. Yeah. So you grab the bat and you put your bathrobe on. Like, that makes a difference. Like, you don't want a burglar to see you totally naked. That would be embarrassing. It's like, oh, I just came in to rob your home. Jesus, could you put a robe on, please? You know, that doesn't matter. But you put a robe on and you grab a bat and you start walking downstairs, assuming you have two levels. You start walking downstairs with the bat. And what's the first thing you say? Hello? You're being friendly. I'm going to kill you. I have a bat. I'm coming downstairs because you've entered into my home illegally at 2 o'clock in the morning. You probably have a gun or a knife. Hello? Hi, how you doing? What's the burglar supposed to say? Yeah, hello? Does the burglar say, hi? I'm sorry, I'm cracking myself up. Because it's so stupid, some of the things we do. Hello? Hello? Get out of my house. Hello? Anyway, that's it. I'm done. That's all I got. Have a good day. Bye. I just shot my load. That's my A stuff. It's over. Have a good day. What do you want? I've been doing this like for 25 years or whatever. Every day. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? Start lying like Brian Williams? Oh, there's an interesting story. Brian Williams, as you probably know, I assume that you... Hello? Brian Williams said some bad stuff, man. Brian Williams made stuff up. He made stuff up. He said that... I don't go through the whole thing. He's an NBC newscaster. He was an NBC news anchor, a very prestigious job. Apparently, there's the Pope, and then there's a news anchor. Both of these people must be trusted to the hilt. must have absolutely no dirt on them, no baggage. NBC newscaster, anchor, oh my God, you've got to be so clean. It's not, you've got to squeak, baby. Anyway, Brian Williams says that he's, he felt pressure to be funny, to be over the top, to be entertaining. He started appearing on all these talk shows and they kept asking him for funny stories. And he started, I guess, embellishing because he thinks you, when you tell stories, you tell stories, kind of forgetting that he's the exalted NBC newscaster who, and they never lie. They never lie. Yeah, try that out. Try to go home to Mrs. Williams, Brian, and Mrs. Williams will say to you, hey, do you think I look fat in this dress? Yeah, be honest then, Brian. You'll be kicked off of your news desk for lying about that, too. So Brian Williams lied about being in a helicopter in a war zone, and he claims that his helicopter was shot down, but it wasn't. It was a different helicopter. It wasn't his, and he got into trouble for it. He's for some reason, this is like blasphemy. He should be going to hell or something because he lied or embellished a story.
The story actually started with a terrible moment a dozen years back during the invasion of Iraq, when the helicopter we were traveling in was forced down after being hit by an RPG. Our traveling NBC News team was rescued, surrounded, and kept alive by an armored mechanized platoon from the U.S. Army 3rd Infantry.
That never happened. It happened to a different helicopter. Didn't happen to Brian Williams. A total lie. A story. And he apologizes for it. He feels just horrible, as he told David Letterman quite some months ago, that he made it up, and he is apologizing.
Two of our four helicopters were hit by ground fire, including the one I was in.
No kidding.
RPG and AK-47.
What happens the minute everybody realizes you've been hit?
We figure out how to land safely, and we did.
All right, so he's telling the false story again on the David Letterman show, because you have to tell stories on the Letterman show. You have to be entertaining. Now you're not a newscaster. You're an entertainer. And that's where Brian says he got screwed up. Here's his apology.
I want to apologize. I said I was traveling in an aircraft that was hit by RPG fire. I was instead in a following aircraft. This was a bungled attempt by me to thank one special veteran.
It was no bungled attempt to thank a veteran, my goodness. Anyway, NBC released Brian Williams and said, you can't be our news anchor because you tell lies. And now, just a few days ago, NBC has somewhat forgiven Brian Williams. As a matter of fact, that South Carolina church shooting, almost all of the victims' families, all of the victims who were gunned down horrifically, their families say that they forgive the shooter. I would not. I guess I'm not that religious. I wouldn't forgive for that at all. I would say, damn you to hell, and I'll take you there and get in the back seat. I'm driving. I'm making sure you get to hell right now. I would not forgive. Sorry, just not the way I roll. So I guess NBC had to say, well, if these families with their slain family members are going to forgive the shooter, I guess we have to somewhat forgive Brian Williams. Because certainly those crimes are not on a great par with each other. So what they did was they assigned Brian Williams to work at MSNBC, which is so funny to me because he's not good enough. He's a liar and he's untrustworthy. So you can't put him on NBC. So we'll put him on MSNBC, where all of our anchors are really loony bin people. You know what I'm saying? If it was Republican, he'd probably be on Fox and Friends, but he's not, so he gets to go to MSNBC. It's one or the other. So that's what happened with Brian Williams, and I hope that you were entertained by that, because it was not really that entertaining.
Over the internet and into your face, it's the all-new Ron Van Dam Show on Metro South Podcasting. You've got some Van Dam on your cheek there, just up by your, yeah, right there. You probably want to wipe that off quickly. That stuff really stains.
Hey, I got one question for you.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
Today I'll be wearing a hat. Hats are interesting. Hats have turned into a coverage for the head so that you don't get a sunburn. And shielding it with the beak on a cap, you know, actually shielding you from the sun and your eyes from the sun. Hats were very, very popular back in the 30s and 40s and 50s. Every adult wore a hat. Every kid kind of wore a cap. And head coverings were very, very big, as they still are in the Middle East, where it's like 120 degrees in the shade. Hey, let's wear a head covering. Oh, yeah, that's fine. How can we sweat even more? Let's cover our entire bodies. How can we punish women? Let's put them out in 120 degree heat in the desert, where we live, and let's cover them in a black robe and a hood. Let's make them sweat so much, they probably will die. I'm got to assume that Middle Eastern women who have to wear these black robe coverings all day and all night, I assume that none of them are fat, because how can you get fat when you've got like this walking sauna going on? Maybe that's the intention. I don't know. Anyway, head coverings were very, and I like hats. And I think if you ask most people, do you like a good looking hat? Most people will say yes. There are the blue-collar slobs of our country who wear a baseball cap with a suit. You know what I'm saying? They never, they wear baseball caps all the time. And not so much because they love baseball, but just because that's what they do. They think they look good in a baseball cap. Let me tell you something, and let me tell you something very straight and very honestly true as far as I'm concerned. If you're over 25 years old, you look like a fucking moron wearing a baseball cap all the time. I'm sorry, but that's the way that I feel. Baseball caps are for children. Ron, why? Baseball caps are worn by baseball players into their 50s. Why are you saying that they look like children? Because they do. It's the same thing when you go into McDonald's or Wendy's or any one of those little highfalutin fast food places. They dress everybody in these little polo shirts that little kids run around in when they're 5 years old. You see these 50-year-old guys wearing little polo shirts and a baseball cap. Man, you're 50. Have some dignity. Put a fedora on or something like that. Do what other 50-year-old men do. Wear banana-colored golf pants and go play a round of golf and shut up. I'm sorry, am I getting a little testy?
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
I'm sorry, when you wear a baseball cap, a grown man wears a baseball cap, I just think they look like a kid. And I wear a baseball cap very frequently as well. Yes, I do, to cover my head. I mean, I do it for a purpose. Otherwise, I wouldn't wear a baseball cap. If I could, if it were socially acceptable, I'd wear a damn good-looking fedora. I'd wear like a real expensive, nice-looking hat like they did in the 40s and the 50s. I think they look cool then. You tilt that hat down a little bit and you raise your eyebrow. You look like you're a fucking cool man. Nobody looks cool in a baseball cap. I don't care what you think. You don't look cool in a baseball cap. It's just you look laid back and lazy and like a child is what you look like. It looks like your next activity is going to be hopscotch. Sorry, but that's the way that I feel. And you feel certain ways, I feel certain ways, and this is how I feel. That's all I have to say. It looks stupid sometimes. Stupid. People don't care about how they look in public anymore. They'll just go out in the rattiest thing. I can understand going down to Lowe's or Home Depot to pick up a stud, women, or a screwdriver or something, or a block of cement. Put a baseball cap on, the ripped jeans, and go to town, man. But if you're not doing construction and you're going out in public, you've got to just check it out, man. You got But nowadays, everybody looks as sloppy as possible. There was the day when people dressed up because they were going out in public. You want to feel good about something, and it's not as good as it used to be, but it still is. Go to church on Sunday, and this is the only reason that I would ever go to church on Sunday. Go to church on Sunday and just hang out outside. Don't go in for the whole thing. Just hang out outside and watch how people dress up a little bit. Or if it's a funeral, go to a funeral and hang out outside a funeral home or something like that. People dress up. They put a tie on if they're a guy. Or a nice, clean, crisp shirt. They wear long pants. You don't wear shorts to a funeral or to church on Sunday. Some do. Crazy, but you're not supposed to. Some women dress up in their Sunday best. That's the way it should be when you go out in public. And yeah, it's stupid. Adam and Eve didn't wear any clothes. I suppose they wore their dress fig leaves on Sunday. I don't know what they did. I wasn't around. And to be honest with you, I don't kind of trust these mystery writers that wrote these books saying that Adam and Eve were walking around, that some guy was building an ark for like 500 animals and their friends. I mean, nice stories, but I'm sorry, I can't substantiate those stories. You're asking me to distrust Brian Williams? But I assume that Adam and Eve, if there were such things, the first people on the earth, I guess someone had to start this. Maybe it was the apes. Maybe it was Adam and Eve. I have no idea. But someone was smart enough to put a fig leaf over their private parts. Someone was smart enough to know, hey, you've got a uterus, I've got a penis, we got to cover this shit up immediately. Anyway, because the snake could see us, and we don't want the snake to see us naked. My God, that would be embarrassing. Oh, my goodness. And that's, what are you wearing?
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
Hey, this is Bobby Marone, former heavyweight contender. But you know me as the guy who runs the area's favorite Italian restaurant.
It's Headshots, Bobby.
Headshots. Thank you. Hey, do you like pasta? Of course you do. Then you gotta come to Headshots this month for Pasta Lamusa.
Pasta Palooza.
Pasta Pacula.
Pasta Palooza.
Pasta Lanusa.
Pasta Palooza.
Pasta Paducah.
Pasta Palooza.
Pasta Patchouli.
Nice. Pasta Palooza.
Pasta Potato.
Pasta Palooza.
Mr. Potato.
Back on track, Bobby. Pasta Palooza.
Pasta Fajoule.
On the menu, but Pasta Palooza.
Patsy Cline.
No idea where that came from.
Pasta Canunza.
Pasta Palooza.
Pasta Cholula.
Pasta Palooza.
Jesus, just come out and have some goddamn spaghetti.
Headshots now open Tuesday through Sunday at the corner of Flange and Hassenpfeffer.
Whatever.
All right, fine. Welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. My name is indeed Ron Van Dam, and the pleasure is certainly all yours. It always was all yours. It always was. You know, every once in a while, we all slip back into our minds, especially if you meditate. I don't meditate because it's too quiet. And if I play music in the background while I'm meditating, I can't meditate. So I have great trouble meditating. But every once in a while, my mind will go backwards and just recall something from my past. And it happened recently again. And I go back to places. See, most people go back to their traumas in life. Like, oh, I remember I was picked on as a bully. Oh, it was horrible. It was terrible. You know, but I don't do that. I go back to to the pleasure parts of my life, where I was pleasured, and that would be my young adulthood. When I was in my early 20s, I had a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful life. I was living in New York City. Ron, tell us the story. Oh, okay, stop badgering me and I'll tell you. I was living in New York City in Manhattan, and I had one of the best jobs in the whole world. I was a movie theater manager, but not just any movie theater. This is New York City. And the crowds and the excitement and the celebrities that would show up at the movie theater, it was just a great time. I started as an usher, was promoted to a doorman rather quickly. Well, Ron, you must have been incredible. Yes, I learned how to tear tickets. And then I became an assistant manager, and within 6 months, I was manager of some of the biggest movie theaters in Manhattan because I guess I was so wonderful at it. Not a career, ladies and gentlemen, but yet a great way to spend your early years as a young adult. Because when you're a young adult, the idea is to, before you get married, just to taste life, to just, before you have kids, before you get married, before you become responsible, taste life. And what does taste life mean? Fuck everything in sight. That's what it means. And I won't say that I did. All I will say is I had a damn good time for a few years. And as movie theater manager, I could let people in for free. And I did it. And I don't know if management would, I think they're all dead, but I think that management, if they learned that I was letting people in for free, would probably have fired me. But you do it as a comp, you know, you see a friend. Hey, Ron, what's playing in there? Benny and the Jets, want to see? Come on in. No, don't pay. Just come on in. Oh, Ron, you're the best. I know. I was able to do this, and it lent me a lot of friends, and it lent me a lot of dates, and I met a lot of nice women. I dated half of my staff at the movie theater, which I guess you're not supposed to do, but let's face it, I was a man, I was human, I was in my early 20s, I was about 20, and running a movie theater in Manhattan, you bet I took advantage of it. And I hired good-looking people, and I dated half the staff. And the half that I dated were females. The other half were males, and I didn't date them. So I took full advantage of my position, so to speak. And I dated these, and they were some of the most fun relationships I could ever have imagined or could even make up. They were good times. They were just really good times. And there's nothing wrong with that, kids. There's nothing wrong with it. There was this couple that used to, I was working at the Gramercy Theater, which was in the Murray Hill section, the Gramercy Hill, Murray Hill section of Manhattan down in the, around 34th Street, in that area. It actually was on 34th Street. The Gramercy Theater, it's still there, but it's no longer a movie theater. It is a rock palace kind of place. They have concerts there and comedians and things like that. But it used to be a movie theater when I was there. And Gramercy Hill area, very, very ritzy. Very, very snobby, may I say? Very, very snobby. And if you had a lot of money in New York, you lived in the Gramercy Hill area. And I did not, because I didn't have a lot of money. I lived in Queens, but I worked in New York City. Anyway, there was this couple that came in, and he would always wear a tie and a pressed suit, and a very, he probably had millions and millions and millions of dollars, and his wife would wear fur coats in the summer. And now you wear a fur coat, someone is going to actually stab you. Back then, it was somewhat acceptable, but not. But in the Murray Hill section of New York, people wore mink coats. And she always smelled of the highest quality perfume. And she had flowing blonde hair, this guy's wife. No, I didn't go after her. Let me finish the story. And they would come in at least once a week to see a movie. And one night, I was feeling very, very chipper. And I was feeling nice. I was feeling good because I smoked pot sometimes while I was working. I'm sorry, I did. I'm being honest with you. Not a lot, but sometimes I did. It would make the evening a lot more fun. This couple comes by, and they bring their daughter, and there's this lovely, beautiful, blonde woman with them, who's a little bit shorter than them. I figured it must be their daughter. And her name was Candace, and they introduced her to me, and they said, "Candace, this is Mr. Van Damme. He runs the theater here. He's a very, very nice man. He's been very, very nice to me and your mother, hasn't he?"
Yes, it's been lovely. It's been lovely.
They had a little bit of a British accent, even though they weren't British. If you were rich back then you had to talk like this. You had to kind of grit your teeth like Thurston Howell III from Gilligan's Island, a reference many of you probably don't know because you're not old enough. But you grit your teeth and you act very millionaire. She goes, "Yes, he let us in last night, lovey, and a wonderful top of the heap kind of guy, a wonderful, wonderful man." And Candace says, "Pleasure to meet you, Mr. Van Damme." I said, "Pleasure to meet all of you. Do you know what? Please be my guest tonight in the movie theater. Enjoy yourselves. And this is on me this evening. Thank you for your patronage. And a pleasure to meet you, Candace." I knew when I was saying that I was loading my pistol. And they were so thankful. "Oh, thank you, Mr. Van Damme. Oh, call me Ron. Thank you, Ron. So nice of you. You are the top of the litter. Thank you very much." And they go and they see the film, and then they leave. And somehow, and I don't remember how, somehow, within the weeks to come, I'm talking to these people again, and Candace is not there. And there's some type of someone makes a suggestion. I don't think I was forward enough to do it, but someone made the suggestion. Would you like to visit Candace? And I said yes. I'd love to visit Candace. "Well, you can come up to her. You've not been up to our place before. Why don't you come up to our place? We're only two blocks away. And have a cocktail and say hello. And on your way to work next time, I'd be happy to see you. Shall we say tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. "Well, fine. I'll be happy to stop up. Great. Here's our address. There you go." And I said, "Thank you very much." And the next night, I dressed very, very well. And I go to the Murray Hill section about two blocks away from the movie theater. And I'm looking at the address on the piece of paper. They wrote down the address on a piece of paper. And it's a beautiful, beautiful home with gates and things and beautiful brownstone and foliage and stuff. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful place. And I get in the elevator and I go to the third floor and the elevator door opens and I'm in their apartment. In other words, the third floor is their place. It's not like the elevator door opens and there's a hallway and you have to look for which is their little apartment. No, they own the third floor. The elevator door opens and you're in their fucking living room. It was like unbelievable. And the opulence in there, the finest of furnitures and chandeliers and Victorian wallpaper. It's just... was amazed. I felt like I just walked into a palace on the third floor in the Gramercy Park area of Manhattan. And there they are. They greet me and they say, "What is your pleasure? I have some brandy that I acquired from overseas. It is excellent. It is heaven. You've got to try it." "Well, certainly." And he pulls out a brandy snifter. Those are the big glasses, man, and you put a little bit of the alcohol in it, but the glasses are big, and you're supposed to swirl it around and sniff it and all that. I knew that kind of stuff. I knew it. I knew that stuff, and I took a little swig of that, and it was powerful good. It was like powerful whiskey, ladies and gentlemen, but it's from the British Isles or someplace overseas. And Candace comes walking out of a room, which I assume was her bedroom, and she says, "Ron, so good to see you. You're looking fine tonight." And Candace is wearing this perfume that just knocked my prick off. It was just so alluring and tasty. And I said, I've got to go to the movie theater. I've got to. Would you care to come by this evening? "Oh, we can't. We can't. We haven't. We can't this evening. But we'd love to see her. We'd love to see her." And Candace says, "Well, you know, would you like to go out sometime?" She asked me out. And I said, "Well, yes, Candace, that would be wonderful." So we make arrangements to go out on a Saturday evening, that Saturday evening. Well, and I left and I went to the movie theater. But my little dick is going crazy. I said, oh, this is wonderful. This is the first date I have ever had in my life with a high society woman. And I liked it. It was very alluring to me. And Saturday night couldn't come fast enough. Neither could I. We went out. We went out. And we got into a taxi cab. I had to grab every piece of money I could find in my apartment, my shabby little apartment. They didn't know where I lived. I lived in Queens, and it wasn't a big place at all. It was like a studio apartment. I grabbed money. I borrowed money. I sold my shoes. I mean, I had to have a wad of cash on me because I knew this girl was going to cost me money. And thank God I had a few credit cards. They were tapped out, but it didn't matter. This was going to be the night of my life. I pick up Candy. That's pretty funny. That's her name. I pick her up, and she's looking marvelous, and she's wearing that perfume that I just think is wonderful. And we get in the elevator, we get on the first floor, and we grab a cab, and we're on our way going up uptown. We go to, I believe it was it was Fifth Avenue, and I think 64th or 65th, 66th, something like that, right on Central Park. It was the Hotel Carlyle, which still exists. And inside the Hotel Carlyle is a piano bar, which still exists. And she said, you know what I do on Saturdays, Ron? I go to the Hotel Carlyle. I have a little bit of dinner and a beverage, a drink, a cocktail, and I listen to Bobby Short. And I made believe I knew who Bobby Short was, but I didn't know. I figured Bobby Short has got to be kind of a tiny guy. Why would they call him Short? Well, it's his last name, asshole. Okay. Bobby Short was a piano lounge singer, and she just loved it. And we walked into the Hotel Carlyle, into the lobby, and they are just so amazing there. It's just fantastic. And we walked in, and we walk into this beautiful, beautiful bar, this beautiful lounge. And there, sitting at the piano, is Bobby Short. This is not one of his songs, by the way. It's just piano jazz music. And Bobby's playing the piano. And I walk in there with Candy. And I was not a very forward young man, but Candace was a forward young girl, and she grabbed my hand, held it tightly, and we found a table, and she held my hand under the table for quite some time, and kind of took my hand and put it on her leg frequently. And I said to myself, I don't know where I'm going to get it, but I'm getting it tonight. Of course I didn't. But thinking that I was just as joyous at that point. And we had some cocktails, and I believe the term is shit-faced, I don't know. But she loosened up like a free-range chicken, man. She loosened up, and she was quite delightful. She was high-class, society, still talked with that, but she was giddy and fun and loose and wonderful. And it was quite an evening listening to Bobby Short. It cost me a fortune, but it was pretty cool. And I took her home in the taxi cab, another small fortune, and brought her to the elevator. Didn't bring her up to the third floor, because what's the point? The elevator door opens into her place, and her parents would be there. So I give her a kiss goodnight, and it was quite a kiss, I must say at this time, as I recall it. I dated Candace for quite a period of time after that. I would say about 6 months. And you might say, Ron, whatever happened to that relationship? I got transferred to a different movie theater shortly after. But I don't think that's the reason I stopped seeing her, because I could still visit her, obviously, even though I wasn't in her neighborhood. But I didn't. And I think the reason was I just couldn't afford her. I had no money to make her feel the way that she was used to being felt. I don't know. I could never bring her to my apartment because it was too low class for her. That would have killed it or embarrassed me. You know, I guess I was playing this rich, highfalutin snootin' game, which I really didn't have a hand in, but I certainly played it well. It was like playing poker. I had a lousy hand, but nobody really knew it. And that's my Candace story, and I hope you've enjoyed it. It's a story that kind of festers in my mind, and every once in a while when I'm feeling bad about myself, which is not really very frequently, I will refer back to that memory, which really has no place in my life anymore at all. But yet every little memory serves a purpose, and that's my purpose.
And that was another funny story from Ron. Wait, that was supposed to be funny? Wow.
Yeah, it wasn't supposed to be funny. It was supposed to be a little slice of life. I'm sure you have little slices. Only you don't have a radio show to publicly expose your slices. But I guess I do. So, let's switch gears now. This will have nothing to do with anything that I've talked about. By the way, coming up, I think later this week, if not next week, we are going to talk to this guy that runs the largest brothel in the country. He has 5 locations in the Las Vegas area, actually in Reno, just outside of Reno. And yeah, we're going to talk to some of those girls and talk to him about this brothel. And how do you feel about something like that? Yeah, right? Huh? Yeah. And they actually take credit cards. This is actually from their place. Here, they take credit cards.
Yeah. Oh, we accept Visa, MasterCard, and Discover.
It's going to be a wild show, ladies and gentlemen, and that's coming up in a few days. You don't want to miss that. That'll be like plastered all over the internet, I guarantee you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to speak to our guest for today. And this is promotional consideration, and I'll be honest with you, it is promotional consideration. You know, someone has to sponsor these things, because you're not paying for it, so somebody does. So we're going to talk to the Kalahari Resorts. There's a new place that's opening up. It's a water park for kids, and it's in the Poconos, which is on the Pennsylvania-New York border. Within driving distance, you stay overnight and the kids are just entertained and you have some drinks in the pool and you're really happy. The place is opening and we're going to speak to them right now. Let's say hello to them. Hello, 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 hello. I have a bat. Hello.
Hi, Ron.
Hey, Amy. How you doing? It's going.
I'm doing great. I feel like I'm in Africa on vacation.
I bet you do, because you probably are, but you're not. This is Amy Tarakat. She's an author and travel journalist, and she has been dropped into the center of an African safari park somehow.
Dropped. Yes, I am at Kalahari, which is opening on July 1st, which is this incredible, I can't just call it a water park. They call it a world away, because it's authentically African with all kinds of artwork that's been brought in from Africa, African music created in Rwanda. They serve Rwandan coffee beans, all kinds of rides, and it's created by the Nelson family, inspired by Africa, into a vacation spot that's really for the whole family. There's so much to do here, it boggles the mind.
So this is located in the Poconos. Where are the Poconos exactly?
We're about 40 minutes from Scranton, so right in the heart of the most beautiful part of the Poconos. There are lakes, horses, trees. I mean, it's so idyllic here. It's like it's got a sort of the Dirty Dancing backdrop.
Dirty Dancing backdrop. Okay. Why, did they film Dirty Dancing there? Is that what happened?
I don't know.
Okay, fine. Anyway, we move on. Anyway, yeah, it is a beautiful area anyway. But this is so it's like going to Africa to on a safari and seeing all the animal. Do they have animals there actually?
You know, here's the thing. Africa is such a dream destination for so many people. I mean, that is on everyone's bucket list. But the truth of the matter is, it's exorbitant to get there, and we don't know. You know, you don't know if you're going to get there. So that's one of the things that inspired the Nelson family to create this. They went in the 90s to Africa and wanted to create and, like, bring the magic of the country, essentially, to the Poconos. Actually, they have two other destinations in Sandusky, Ohio, and in the Wisconsin Dells, and create an all-American resort that's something for everyone. So it's designed as all under one roof. So they're not animals like Michael Jackson's house running around, but there are these incredible sculptures. There's furniture from Africa. There are musical instruments from Africa. So the vibe is everywhere.
Okay, but there are children running around the park like at Michael Jackson's house. So that was still a good.
Oh God,
still,
I'm not going to comment on that.
It was still a good analogy. That's what I'm saying. This sounds like a lot of fun. So I mean, this is like wow. The kids must like love this. They must be like in heaven.
So the thing about this place is, when you tell a kid that they are coming on a vacation to not just any water park, but to the world's coolest indoor water park as seen by Condé Nast Traveler, the response is like me, who's a mom, thinking I got a shopping spree at Saks Fifth Avenue. Unadulterated pleasure. And, you know, the thing about a vacation is you really need to find something for everybody. Mm-hmm. If a kid ever says, Mom, I'm bored, it is like the death knell of any holiday. If you come here, you're going to have to drag your kids away from the rides, from the cookie making, the pizza making, swimming, just to eat dinner. Mm-hmm. So it's like the ultimate type of place. And, you know, it's not for parents, somebody like me, I don't want to sacrifice having a good time just for doing something for my kids.
Yeah.
They have the most amazing food here. There's a range from gourmet dining to pub food. Then, of course, there are the ever-present chicken nuggets that have to be the place where there are kids.
Sure, it's kids.
But there's also a spa. Mm. There is, there's a swim-up bar, which makes me very happy.
Yeah.
So there's everything.
Yeah. Well, you've just said everything I need to know, actually, with the bar part. then the kids can go play, and I can go play. So this is fun. Man, what a wonderful idea, because you need new places to open up new horizons, you know. This is an exciting thing. How are reservations available?
No, you bring up a great point about New Horizons, because this is the type of place. You know, there are other water parks out there, but this African theme really sets up an educational experience for kids. Here, they're actually seeing artwork with descriptions. There are videos in the room that chronicle the Nelson family's trips to Africa and all the people they encountered and the places that they went. So there's that element. You're having friction with culture while having a great time.
It's also fun to go to a new place. I mean, whether you've been there before or not, this place just opened up, so it's just fun to be like among the first to be there. I think that's an added attraction at this point, at least. So how do we find out if there are rooms available and all the different types of rooms and stays we can get?
Okay, well, to get more information, go to KalahariResorts.com. But I want to get out there also that there's a great promotion between now and the beginning of September.
Uh-huh.
So you book one night and you get another free.
Oh.
And the resort always announces new promotions weekly on their Facebook page. So you want to check that. And, you know, you mentioned the rooms. I'd also like to say something. There's nothing worse for a family to arrive at a destination and have a teeny tiny room where you just can't unwind.
Oh, yeah.
Because Kalahari is all about having great activities, being out there, being active all day, and then the rooms are huge. They're created for families.
Great.
So a family of five can fit into a large room, and you've got the space to just unwind and regenerate before you go on the Tanzanian twister.
I bet it makes you feel I bet it makes you feel like you don't want to go home.
Whoever wants to go home.
Okay.
I'm kidding. No, it's true. It's such a fun place. It's the type of place that would create memories of a lifetime, because it's not just sightseeing. Children and families, I mean, sightseeing is wonderful, but it's at these active activities where you're spending time with your family that are really for the scrapbook and remain a memory for your whole life.
Sounds like fun. It's a great, you can drive it in one day here from the Boston, New England area And it's probably about a 6-7 hour drive, which is a one day kind of thing. You stop off for a little food, and then you're there, and you stay there for a period of time, and you have a great time. What a wonderful idea for the summer without having
you know, and these days, one of the big trends in travel is all under one roof, where there's something for everyone. Uh-huh. And you maximize your vacation time by minimizing the amount of time you have to spend in transit. So the avoiding that plane flight saves you money and also gives you more vacation time. So you really hit the nail on the head.
Sounds like fun. I wish I was where you were and you were where I am, so I don't have to do this and I can go on a water slide, which I kind of like, to be honest with you. So, okay.
Water slides are the bomb. I know.
They just have to make them big enough for my butt.
You need to get 2 water park visits to Kalahari written into your next contract.
Okay. All right. One more time, the website.
It's at KalahariResorts.com, opening on July 1st. It's going to make a big splash, and there's a giant celebration on July 4th with fireworks and performances, and it's just going to be awesome.
Really cool. Hey, Amy, thanks for your time this morning.
Oh, thanks so much. Had a great summer.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, all right. Thank you, Amy, and thank you to you for your indulgence today. I'll be with you again next time. Please come back. Until then, I wish you peace. Bye. Yay, bye.